Following is a special presentation of Belfast Community Radio. On September 30th, 2024, the Belfast City Council Candidates Forum was held at the Boathouse. You're about to hear hour number two of that presentation.
For the challengers, can you comment on what you would bring to the dynamics of the City Council? And Mr. Hike, I'll start with you.
I think the most important thing for me would be to try and have a balanced and sustainable and diversified economy. The first thing that springs to mind is the kelp farm. I think it's a great asset. The mussel farm is a great asset. And the oyster farm is a great asset. I think cleaning up Penobscot Bay should be a priority. Were it not for the Maine People's Alliance, there would be no mercury being cleaned up. That's been a problem for years. Everything north of Searsport is contaminated. So I think anything we can do to improve the bay is both important to the economy for tourists and for people seeking employment here that can make a livable income. I think the question of the Hutchinson Center is really important, and that the City Council should become involved in that at some level. And the hospital, I think they're the three things that would be most important to me: the hospital, the Hutchinson Center, and restoring Penobscot Bay.
Thank you. Mr. August?
Some things I'd like to see happen. I'd like to see our economic development office be refocused on housing. I know there's two people in that office now. We render technical assistance for larger businesses. I'd like to put that towards housing, helping smaller developers navigate the process that we've created, the zoning process. If you want to do anything that involves business and housing, you're going to need a surveyor, an architect, maybe a landscaping architect, a lawyer, a civil engineer, and to go through the planning board. And I think it's kind of dismissive when you just get told, well, you can do it, you just go through the planning board. Well, that gets really expensive. I'd like to see that change. I'd like to repeal home business rules that we changed in 2023. We went from half a page of home business rules to 11 pages. I only found out about it because I had an application in at the time. Nobody was asking for this other than the planning department. I think that's top-down planning, and I think it's wrong. I think planning should start from citizen-led groups. It should not start from people that are employees for the city. I think that's, you know, we're getting that wrong. I think we need to start at the committee level up, doing that kind of stuff. I'd like to see more small business incubation. One thing that's not talked about a lot is that our storefronts have gotten very expensive. It's gotten very difficult to build new business space. And that requires, if somebody is an entrepreneur and they want to get into a small business, they now have to make a big bet to get in that space because the rents are very high, their startup costs are very high. I'd like to see something more like pop-up shops, something that we can do maybe on city land. We have a lot of city land, something year-round, something like, you know, we have a couple farmers market. I'd like to see something like that for small businesses. And then I'd like to work on slowing traffic down on a lot of roads. There's a lot of high-speed roads here, more youth engagement, and I have a couple of east side issues that I guess I'll talk about later because I'm out of time.
Thank you very much. There's a couple of questions here about what you think should be done with some of the spaces currently sort of in limbo, if I could use that word, in Belfast. For example, the potato factory spaces, the former nursing home on High Street. In your opinion, what should be done with those, and what would you do as a city councilor to try and encourage that kind of development? And I will go ahead and start with Mr. Hike.
Well, I think, first of all, that we should approach it from maybe a tax credit point of view and let the waterfront property is going to bring in more taxes if we don't go that route. The Bradbury Nursing Home, I think, would be an excellent choice for trying something with funding from the state. At a certain balance, you've got huge amounts of tax revenue coming in from the waterfront properties, and we've got to acknowledge it and live with it. And as for subsidized housing, there's a lot of property available for doing it, and there's a huge amount of grant money out there in Maine. The Libra Foundation, any number of foundations who will subsidize housing privately rather than depending on the state to do it. So I would go that route and try and find grant money to develop the sites that wouldn't necessarily bring in huge amounts of property tax income like the McCrum's factory would.
Thank you. Ms. Mortier?
So I'll start with 74 High Street, which, for those of you who don't know it, is the Bradbury Manor, because it's been closed for many years, is on High Street just at the top of Commercial Street. That property has been tied up in court for the last 2 years, and a ruling was passed a bit ago, and we actually have had discussions at several council meetings about it, and it will be on the next agenda tomorrow night. There is a very good chance that as a council we will be voting eminent domain on that property. We have a very active brownfields assessment program here in Belfast, which has brought great benefits to us in many ways, and it is lined up and this is public information that's out there available for people to pull up for a few weeks now. They've done the phase one and two analysis of the property, and we've got the numbers on what it will cost to demolish the property. And that will be land that is a prime piece of land, walkable to many things in the downtown and surrounding area, that very possibly will become the beginnings of a housing situation on city land.
Thank you very much. Mr. August?
Can you just repeat the question?
Sure. What would you recommend as a city councilor be done with some of the open spaces, such as the former McCrum factory and the Bradbury Manor?
Well, the open spaces, as far as vacant lots concerned, that's a tough one because I believe strongly in property rights, and that's, you know, it's somebody's lot, and if it's not dilapidated and it's just sitting there and they're sitting on it, the only thing I could say is we have to make sure it's taxed fairly and appropriately, that we're not undertaxing it, so we're not, you know, incentivizing someone to sit on it for speculation purposes, so that we can see it put back to use as soon as possible. For dilapidated buildings, I don't disagree with anything that the council has done. I would be in the same position with, you know, and I think we have some very, you know, we have a lot of fiscal restraint already on the council. I've never once, I'm not suggesting that there isn't. So I think that they're going to be making sure that, you know, what gets done, or if I was there, I'd be making sure what gets done does not cost a lot for taxpayers, even if it has to be, you know, secured and sat on for a few years until the funding is found. I understand what they're doing, that, you know, there's definitely a need to do something about that property. I'd like to see the economic development. I've talked about this. There's an option that other communities have, which is an economic development corporation, which is kind of quasi-public. If you set that up and you do some funding of it through TIFs, you have the option for to get the economic development more involved directly in revitalizing some of these properties, whether it be those or, say, housing for, like, teachers like Camden is doing. So I think we need to start pushing that direction with where our housing costs are going. I think it's, you know, it's very important that we take a more active role through the economic development for those sort of things. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dean?
Yes. Bradbury Manor is a danger to the community. The local children that are around that building, someone could go inside and fall through floors. It is dangerous. It's next to other buildings, and it's a fire danger. The owner, unwilling to work with us to do anything about it. And so we're elected to look at it, taking it by eminent domain. Well, then it's going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to take it down. Tax money. That's not good. So the city council, working with the economic development department, has come up with a way to have Brownsville grant money be be used to take the building down. Not taking tax money to do it. Making it safe again. It's been decades since that building's been used. The pictures of the inside are pretty atrocious. If you haven't seen them, they're not good at all. And so you could bring it back to a bare lot. If it's in the commercial district, the bottom level could be commercial use, but I look at it as, you know, housing, you know, and set that building on that. I like the idea of mixed housing myself, rich, poor, and middle class, you know, old, young, and families. Exactly the people I met when I walked downtown in 1980. That's what Belfast is a working community, and always will be, it should be. And so as for McCrum's, it is private ownership. And there'll be a point in time where the person who owns it will decide what to do. And then it will go through contract rezoning to make sure it's what it should be. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Harkness.
Thank you. Yeah, Bradbury Man has been well addressed. I know people flinch when they hear the eminent domain, but I have to say, I think this will be one of the most popular eminent domain takings in history. So to me, there are, I mentioned earlier that you get in the issue of sprawl versus density. You know, there are a lot of people don't want to see anything on these empty spaces downtown. They want, and you can make a good case for keeping them as green space, but they are privately owned, and the owners will do what they will with them. I think there are three important open spaces downtown. There is the former potato plant. Problem is that's waterfront, and it is going to cost whoever wants to buy it millions of dollars to buy. You know, I've heard rumors about it's in sky-high asking price. I don't know if they're correct or not. Talk about rumors about a hotel or about high-priced condos, but I don't know who wants to build buy a high-priced condo that's underneath a state highway. I think the best case scenario, hopefully, is that Front Street Shipyard will decide they have use for it. That seems the most likely. It's not going to be anything cheap. People have come to me and said, why don't they build subsidized housing there? Because it will cost millions of dollars. The only way the Congress Street really got done is because it was city land, and it didn't cost millions of dollars. The other two spots are the Washington Street lot, which would have been developed years ago, except it ran into the pollution problem from the old CMP facility there, which ended up killing a $4 million project the Palmer family planned to do there. And the other is the former freezer plant, and that is the one I think we can have some hope. That is the one that can be effectively developed, and I hope that McCrum's will move on some kind of a project there soon.
Thank you very much. Not surprisingly, the majority of the questions that we have received have to do with the Nordic Aqua Farm issue, which has been a top issue for the city for a number of years. Could you each please talk about your thoughts on this issue, where it should go, where the city council should be involved, and what the future of the project you think should be? Ms. Mortier, I'll start with you.
So there's very little that we can talk about the Nordic project right now because there are so many court cases that are in progress that we're not allowed to talk about. I'm going to say, though, that there seems to be a portion of the community that thinks that there's a lot of backroom secret stuff going on, and there is not. And it's sometimes quite amusing to read some of the thoughts and information that people put out there. If you haven't noticed already, Nordic has taken Belfast off their website. I'll just leave that hanging there for you to think about. So I'm good about following rules when it comes to legal things. And I'm going to continue to follow the direction that has been pounded into my head so that I don't get in trouble. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mr. August?
back to the beginning when they first came, let's talk about one thing I didn't like seeing, and that was that, you know, I'll go back to zoning, that when they came here, there was nowhere in Belfast zoned for what they wanted to do, and that we instantly changed our zoning regulations to accommodate one business. That's a practice I do not like seeing. I also do not like to see contract rezoning. That would be something, if I had my way, it would end. I look at it as, if there's a use that you want in town, you need to be willing to put it down in writing and have it be fair and have it be understandable for anyone that wants to do it. There's just too much with that practice that it smells bad. Even if it goes right, it just smells bad having, you know, to have businesses come and negotiate with the city council directly. We have an economic development office. We have zoning office. I mean, we have a planning office. We have building codes. Again, I think we need to really look at our zoning and start thinking about where we can improve that so we don't constantly get sucked into these things. Another thing I didn't like seeing about it, I did not like seeing the amount of resources that we put towards it. I just, you know, sit back and think, well, gee, what if we put those kind of resources into small businesses or home building or things? It almost kind of crossed the line of cheerleading, and I view the city's role more of just a neutral arbiter. We lay down the rules. This is a business we want. You know, it should be something we're just calling balls and strikes on, not something that we're going to bat for. I know, you know, it's jobs. When a big business comes to town, they don't need our help to provide jobs. They're looking, you know, they have the money, they have the resources, hopefully, to do things right. So, you know, I'd rather, again, focus our resources on the small businesses, people that are already here. So that's something, you know, I would look for. And then, if I did get on the council, I would look to end it as soon as possible. It doesn't look like it's going to come to fruition, and I think it's run its course.
Okay. Mr. Dean, would you like to comment?
Yes. In 2018, when I was elected, I ran in support of Nordic Aqua Farms. It was already voted in by the council before I became a council. I've been involved with 3 votes since then. And one of them was to lower the tank size from 50 to 45. I voted in favor of that, 5-0 vote. Another one was I voted in the majority for the remand order, to give the property back to the owner. And I've also voted in support of a surveyor between the city of Northport and Belfast. I think it's very important to know where that line is between the two communities. There's really not an awful lot more I can say about it because Nordic is still in litigation. And it's going to be up to Nordic to carry the ball to the end zone if that's what they plan to do, not the city of Belfast. But the only reason why I supported it from the start is because of the first thing we talked about tonight, and that was taxes. If Nordic had been up and running by now, taxes wouldn't have hurt so much this year. And when I grew up, back in the 80s, you could tell where the water line was on a boat because of the grease slime across it. It came from the sardine plant. We had some of the best fishing you ever saw back then because you were chumping for the fish to come into the bay. That wasn't good. And I understand that. And it's a lot cleaner now. And it's going to improve. So we need to let Nordic go its course. And I'm playing hands off. And that's all the time I have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dean. Mr. Harkness?
Thank you. When Nordic first was proposed, and I will have to say that the Economic Development Office, the Planning Office, everyone else was just involved. It wasn't just council making a decision without their advice. My position was, first of all, it would be fiscally irresponsible to not pursue an opportunity that could pay up to half the city's budget in taxes if it met the approval of all the agencies, environmentally, the Army Corps of Engineers and all that. And so I supported it with that caveat that it had to meet those tests. And it did on the surface. Now we know that maybe a lot of things that they told the agencies and the city weren't necessarily entirely correct. But I thought, you know, Paul is right. You wouldn't have gotten these big assessments if Nordic was here. Your water bill would not have gone up 30% if Nordic was here. But what's the cost? What was the cost to this community? I don't think the division and conflict that came to the city because of Nordic Aqua Farm would have been worth any amount of tax money they paid. And as far as I'm concerned, I want to completely disengage from them, disentangle. People have said, why don't you just take Upstream Watch's offer? They didn't make us an offer. They made Nordic an offer. If Nordic wanted to make the deal with Upstream Watch to take over the land tomorrow, I want to be there for the ribbon cutting. We need to get out of it. We're trying to get out of it. I don't care if you don't believe me, because that's the truth. I want to disengage. I know other councilors want to disengage. And I think Nordic wants to disengage, but wants to save face.
Thank you. Mr. Hike?
I was appalled when the city council took Judith and Jeffrey's property by eminent domain. I was further appalled by their taking a conservation easement by eminent domain. You can't do it, and the legal advice was just awful. And the taxpayers were charged for this. It was kicked out of the court immediately, out by the law court. There was no apology from any of these people on the board to the owners of the property. They didn't even move in a timely manner to vacate the order for seizure. They waited until another lawsuit was filed and forced them to vacate. Then 2 weeks later, they come in with this perambulation for a boundary that's been established since 1815 without anybody disputing it, and we don't even know to this day exactly who demanded this perambulation. We have someone, a partner from Eaton Peabody, advising the zoning board. Eaton Peabody is on the board of Main and Company that brought us Nordic Aqua Farm. I'm afraid this entire Nordic Aqua Farm fiasco has cost the taxpayers a great deal of money, and it's going to continue to cost a great deal of money because none of these people are going away quickly. Hopefully Judge Duddy will see through this sham and end it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Last year, we saw some very significant storms. We saw the waterfront flooded. The predictions are that this will just continue to happen. As a city council and as a city council member, what would you consider to be your role in preparing Belfast to meet climate change impacts? And if I could start with Mr. Dean.
I feel the dewatering building down on the waterfront is our number one concern. Where in results from our collection of sewerage goes, outfalls are not a good thing with the state. Having high-powered equipment that close to the water level, it's not a good idea. That was built many years ago. Luckily, it is back a ways, and I think it can be protected for a while. But eventually, and with any luck by the time that particular system is timed out in usefulness, we can look at setting it back up further. That's the first really important one. There are other small things to do. I think the harbor master's shack ought to be movable. You got a bad storm coming, haul it in, remarry it down the road, plug it back up. What else can you do? That is a good spot for the harbor master shack in good weather. But when you got a storm coming, that's not a good place at all. So what? And this is what I'm saying. If you've got any good ideas, give me a call, because it's really important to have more people thinking about our problems and getting better solutions to move forward. How are you going to do that? I got it right in front of me. That's how you do it. You listen to people and you move forward the best you can. So the sea is going to continue to rise, it appears. The storms keep coming from areas we've never had before. And we've got to be ready. And if we're not, it's going to cost us more taxes. Thank you very much. My time has run out again.
Mr. Harkness.
Thank you. I think the time has come that we stop addressing this issue piecemeal. We can talk about the Harbor Master's Hut. We can talk about the wastewater treatment. I think we need, I think we need to start talking about a master plan. We're sitting in a building that I'm going to bet's not here in 20 years. Sad to say, I don't think this is. I've watched, I used to live right up on the hill right here, and even a few years ago, I watched waves going over the top of this building in big nor'easters. And they're getting worse and worse and worse. And a storm like we had, the two that we had back to back in January, could take this building down. And I don't see how it's salvageable. That's a tough call. What about the park here? That's all fill. That could all wash away. Have you seen North Carolina and Tennessee? They're 300 miles inland, and look what happened to them. I don't know that this park is salvageable. Maybe it is. I think we need to address these issues now and not wait till these things happen. We're already working on looking at federal money for raising and lengthening the breakwater. Joanne's sitting here watching me. She's the head of the Harbor Committee. She's going to listen very closely to what I have to say, and I would like her input when the time comes of possibly creating a master plan committee to work with the council, representatives from the Climate Change Committee, the Harbor, local businesses, all the stakeholders on a plan rather than keep putting Band-Aids on it. We've got to decide. Are there places we can retreat? Retreat? Are there places we can fortify? Let's not wait until we're doing it in water up to our knees.
Thank you. Mr. Hike?
I think the committees that are already established have been studying this, and we should follow their advice. I'm sure they've forgotten more than I'm ever going to know on the subject. I guess we're blessed that we are on such a steep hill, and a great deal of the community will be spared. The homeowners who live right on the ocean certainly should be filing for federal insurance, and I think the breakwater is essential. And I think that's about it.
Ms. Mortier?
I think that we're very fortunate as a community that we have some very strong committees that that advise the City Council. One of the first ones was the Energy Committee. Very good work was done by them, and they have now been melded into another committee. Climate crisis, is another one that's done great work and continues to in terms of guiding us into the future. Housing is another one that I have great hopes for. They've already started producing some really good input and advice, and I know they're going to continue that. Our deputy economic director, on the direction of the city manager, is already working on grants for, just as Neil talked about, planning, broad-based planning for the city of Belfast, especially around the harbor and the downtown area. And we're going to be hearing a lot about that in the next year. The breakwater, there's already been a number of articles out there that will continue. These are big money projects. They will involve federal dollars as well as state and local. They're not just things that happen with a snap of your fingers. And we're very fortunate to have Joanne Mosswell leading the Harbor Committee right now. They also are a tremendous benefit to the city, especially in this area.
Thank you. And Mr. August?
I think the scale of the problem is something the city can't solve by itself. It's heavily dependent on financing. So I know we have a very strong economic development department. We have strong committees. I'm not going to pretend that this is an area where I know a lot. This is an area where I'm going to defer the people that have studied it and know a lot more about the issue. Right now, I'm more focused on kind of meat and potatoes issues. I'm more concerned with people people that are getting priced out of their homes. So, you know, it's something that, you know, you can't work on everything. And I'm, you know, the next couple of years, I you know, this is something where I'm going to defer to the people that know more than me. So, thank you.
Thank you. We have a couple of questions about the topic of bringing, strengthening broadband in the city, and particularly capitalizing on federal funds that might be available for that. And I wonder if you could each comment on how the City Council can help bring strengthened broadband to the city. And if I could start with Mr. Hike.
I don't think there's anything more important at this point. It's essential for industry, it's essential for just home use, and oftentimes I can't even get on the computer to conduct business or communicate with relatives or do anything else. So I think there's a huge gap in what we have and what we need, and I think the economic development people should be on top of it above anything else. It's essential to our for our community to grow and prosper. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. August?
If I had to depend on the internet for my job, I don't. But if I did, I would not be able to live where I live because the service is atrocious. I can see the fiber networks from my house, but our neighborhood has not been wired yet. I know that we've been talking about this for over 10 years in town. There's been a committee that's worked on it. Those surveys must have gone out about 10 years ago when they're asking you about what you'd like to see. And I know they led to some proposals, different options, public network, quasi-public, and then private. And I think, I'm not sure which one we ended up with. I think it was a quasi-public one with Fame Main and GWI. This is one place I'd like to see more transparency. I'd like to see, you know, the contracts posted to see what our recourse is, because it's been a long time, and I know there's a lot of people that are waiting for better service. You talk to a lot of people, and it's just, you know, price has gone way up for what they have, and the service is, you know, seems to be going down. I do remember seeing somewhere in there about being able to hold companies accountable for the service, so I'd really like to dive in more and see where we're at with that, because I don't feel that it's as good, and I haven't heard a lot from people, at least outside of downtown, that have really good service.
Thank you. Mr. Dean?
Speaking to the choir, after a year and a half on Zoom in front of, you know, for the council meetings, being frozen in space, not hearing actually everything that went on was very irritating. Spoke with the service provider, and I'm at the end of a line and have the poorest connection. The story of my life. So I think our economic development director, our economic development person, are the people for the job to start looking for state monies, federal grants. Supposedly there's a bunch of money out there for broadband. And I fully support that effort. It's important for our school children. If we ever have another COVID type of virus, you know, these students may be working from home again. So what are you going to do? Well, you're not going to do very well over my way. And we need to do a lot better. So I'm not looking to raise taxes for it. We need to get some grants. We need help. And supposedly there are a lot of states out there that have received this help, probably Texas and places like that. Eventually, maybe it'll come to Maine. And if when it does, I'd like to have our hand out. And it needs to be better. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Mardier?
So I serve on the Broadband Committee and have for many years. Thomas Kittredge, the Economic Development Director, serves on the Broadband Committee. And a number of other people have come and gone on the committee over the years. We entered into a partnership with GWI early years of COVID, and we did a number of surveys and studies and ongoing measurements of speeds that we've asked people many times to do and call in, and that's been very helpful for people that have done that for our cause. The good news is that GWI was granted a state grant called the Reach Me Grant, and the most needy of our community in terms of they have nothing, HughesNet or dial-up, these are the most needy areas in the community. They will be getting fiber wired, and they will be turned on approximately June of 25. First of all, the total cost of broadband for the community is $8 million. In terms of ranking with the state, I'm going to run out of time. This is really important. In terms of the state, we have too high of a value as a city in terms of, I can't think of the name. Here's the drugs. We can't get state and federal funds like Belmont and Northport and little smaller towns around us that have a greater need. But we're working at it, and things are starting to finally happen. And we think that we have the funding to do this, and we're actually going to be having a meeting at the middle of October, third week of October, that we're going to, I hope, hear some good news. So
thank you very much.
I'll stop.
Thank you. Mr. Harkness, would you like to?
Yes or no?
No, I'm
okay. All right. I was going to yield my time to Mary if she had more to say, because she's the expert being on the committee. I would just follow that up. I can't give you the kind of news she did, which is very in-depth, and I thank her. That's what she's so good at. I'm glad I get to sit next to her, because I can always look at her paperwork and cheat when I don't know what's going on. I think, you know, Paul mentioned the school, and earlier Mr. August mentioned business incubation. These are areas where it's just very important that we have the best possible broadband. And more than that, though, I mean, any business that's going to come here is, that's what I believe Mary said to me one time, that it used to be everybody, when they were looking to buy a house in Belfast or open a business in Belfast, first thing they asked were, how are the schools? Now they say, how's the internet? And I think that's certainly true. So I'm glad that there's good news. And, you know, it's that last mile problem. And it's going to be the people on the outskirts and down the back roads that have the most trouble. But hopefully that'll work out. And I just want to say that we had people on this committee worked long and hard to get to where it is now. And I think they deserve a lot of thanks.
Thank you. This will be our final question before we turn to closing statements. And it's a big one. Unfortunately, we're not going to get to that one, but it is a big one, which is, could you each comment on what you think the most significant issue facing our city in the coming year is, as well as in the coming 5 years? Mr. August, I'll start with you.
I lumped those three together that I said at the beginning, and that's tax fairness, that's housing and small business development, and that's major zoning reform. These are three things that I think personally are broken in town, that we've just gone too long and we haven't looked close enough at the rules and regulations. The rollbacks, when they've happened, have come too slowly. There's, for every one that we roll back, it seems that we put 10 new ones in place. And I look at this as a small developer, and you know, I'm not the only one tired of butting heads with the system of trying to get things done in Belfast. A lot of developers just go, well, it's easier to build outside of Belfast, and that's what they do. And I would really like to stop that. I'd like to bring that back here. We definitely need more housing in town. We need more small business spaces, and we need to make it easier on people wanting to do these things, like a lot easier, not just a little bit easier. And then on the taxes, I think we have, you know, there are some institutions out there. One is the Lincoln Land Policy, I think, Institute down in Cambridge, Mass. And then there's Urban 3, which is down in North Carolina. They've looked at assessments. It's not just us, but it's not something where we have to reinvent the wheel on. There's something where we can go to one of these organizations for very little money and have them look at our valuations and make sure that we reform that over the next year and we do it right and we do it fairly. So I think that's a huge thing. Our over the last year, our city budget has gone up 15%. The school budget went up 6%. The county went up 24%. Our revenues only went up, the non-property tax revenues only went up 6%. So we're actually looking at the city is raising $5.55 million up from $4.11 million out of property taxes. That's a 35% increase. No one's income goes up that much in a year. So I think we've kind of dropped the ball on that this year, and we need to revisit that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dean, or Mr. August. Mr. Dean, would you like to comment on the most pressing issue in the coming year and in the coming 5 years?
In the coming year, it's tax fairness. And you know, I heard 10-15% increase on a city level. Well, last year, our budget for the public works was $400,000 for road repair. It's a lot of money. And we increased it to $500,000. It's the first time since I've been a councilor that has been increased. And, you know, I've heard a lot about road repair. Tire is not cheap. And I think around $100,000, $90,000 goes towards sidewalks. So that needed to happen. So that was some of the increase. So tax fairness to me is important. And it's making sure that the contractors that work in the city make sure they have permits so that the people who have more to their homes get taxed for it. I put in a heat pump. I put in a permit. And they caught it, you know, and they wrote it down, I pay more money. That's what you're supposed to do. You know, we shouldn't be out trying to rip off your neighbor. You should be paying your taxes. And so we ought to have the people who come into town to do work, they should work under a permit, which is what they sit down and follow a law from the state of Maine. That's important. And for closing, over a five-year period of time, is we need a plan for climate change because it's coming. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dean. Mr. Harkness?
Thank you. I think in the coming year, I think we're at, and it's a term you hear all the time, really, and it's kind of annoying, inflection point on the housing issue. As I mentioned earlier, Waldo Capps development is going to include significant amounts of housing in its one of its later phases, but the planning's underway right now. PCHC has talked about housing, possibly within the Bank of America building. One of my clients at Waldo Capps said, wait a minute, I could have my doctor's office and my apartment in the same building. Like that was the greatest thing that could happen. Keep in mind, there's lots of housing being built in Belfast. It's not necessarily the housing that we consider most desirable. 5 years ago, I don't think there was maybe one house on Mossy Ridge. I think it's all full now. Ryan Road, 10 years ago, had one house on it. And it's seven or eight now. Now, these are big, expensive houses, so they're not what we've prioritized, but it is going, the housing is going in. Right now, out past the transfer station, Mr. Hooper out there is building the largest separate house, you know, single house housing development in the history of the city. 48 units going in there, and he's doing something that almost no one does anymore, which is actually build houses to sell rather than just selling lots. So I think we're in the next year is going to be a lot of important things going on in housing. But then in the law, and when we speak to tax fairness, the more people paying in, the less each has to pay. So that does help with that issue. In the long run, as I mentioned earlier, I think we need a master plan on climate change, and it's not just the harbor. Some of the worst storm damage was uphill with runoff. And there's things we can do in zoning and codes that can address some of those issues.
Thank you. Mr. Hike?
I think, as Seth Thayer said, when you play, you pay. And I think we've been living beyond our means, both with the city and the school. And if you're taxing people To the degree that we will be, I think they are making sacrifices to pay their taxes, and so I think the city and the schools and the county should be cutting, and it's just got to be part of the new plan going forward. I think in the next 5 years, housing will be the major issue, and I think that the Airbnb issue has to be addressed at some level because it's just taking so many units out of the housing market that we can't let it continue at the rate it is. So I think while we can get some subsidized housing built, I think we already have some space available that should be put to better use. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Mortier?
I think that the greater budget concerns in the United States with the importance of inflation starting to turn slightly downwards affects us locally greatly. The beauty of this community is the mix in the community. I've mentioned earlier a couple of times that my husband and I chose Belfast. We could have lived anywhere. We chose Belfast because of the people and because of a diverse community and the fact that it was a year-round working community. And I think it's very important that we do everything from every angle to maintain a balance of diversity, especially economic diversity, and that we have plans and policies that help people in the lower tiers of the economic picture. I'm brain fogged here. And that the community is attractive not only because of placemaking and events and boutique shops and architecture, it's because of the people and the diversity that we have. Broadband is top of the line this coming year. I hope that it won't go into 5 years. And I think that also how we get our information, that's a real challenge in our community. We can't be informed citizens just from Facebook or social media. There have to be other avenues to inform our citizens so that we are not just a divisive community that is shooting from the hip.
Thank you very much. I'd now like to invite the candidates to make two-minute closing statements to the voters here and who are listening on WBFY and who will be watching this on Belfast Community Television about your candidacy and why they should be voting for you. If there's no objections, I'll start with Ms. Mortier and we'll move down the table.
Thank you. Next month I'll be finishing up my 12th year on the council. I have thrown my body and soul into work for the community, as well as many other volunteer efforts that I do in the community. And I come to the job prepared, and I do my homework on every issue and every topic that we discuss. And I take on extra work, whether it's I mentioned hiring committees or various committees. Broadband was one example. I'm healthy except for stepping off the curb the wrong way and fracturing a bone last week. But I'm healthy, I have the energy, I have the time, and I have the will. And I have many things that I think I have skills that I can bring to this job in this community that I have more to give and would like that opportunity. And I ask that you vote for me again. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Harkness?
Thank you. As I mentioned in my introduction that you were very kindly read, that I work as a driver for Midcoast Transportation. I've been doing that since 2009 when we were just little Waldo County Transportation before we ended up taking over all these territories from agencies that failed. Typical day for me, I might get up and go out at 6 o'clock in the morning, pick somebody up, take them to a methadone clinic. Then I go get someone who I bring into the hospital for testing or to the dialysis center, or pick someone up and I take them out to Augusta to the Alphonse Center for cancer treatment. Another day I might pick up someone and take them to the DHS appointment, or I might be picking someone up to go on a visitation, go to Bangor to their doctor. I do this all day, 5 days a week, and I spend an awful lot of my time with people that, with all due respect, most people who sit on this council don't interact much with. And I don't mean the council now, I mean generally. That one time I had a conversation with Joe Slocum about someone. He wanted to know, why didn't they come to the city for help? I said, they don't trust you. You're a nice guy, but you're sitting in a suit behind a huge oak desk. People like you have always said they'd help them and haven't. And I ran for council because I dealt with these people every day, and they would tell me their problems and their issues. And I ran for them. I ran to be their voice and to make sure somebody always who knew their lives would be on this council. And, of course, since then I've dealt with, you know, you end up, next thing you know, boom, here's $8 billion. How are we supposed to spend it? And you're like, I just want to know how we get the heat on in these people's apartment. But that's the job. And I've done it the best I can. I haven't always been right, but I've done my best. And I would like to continue to be a voice for those people and to serve the city of Belfast. Thank you for considering giving me support for another term.
Thank you. Mr. Dean?
I was born and brought up in Belfast, and now I live 400 feet from where I was brought up. I went to city schools, met my wonderful wife and got married, have two children, and had a good job. And I've never had a reason to leave this city. And what I found is that I'm comfortable here. And it's not just the city, it's the people. It's us. And I know some of you are newly arrived, you know, 20 years or better ago, but, you know, but that's okay. That keeps me active, keeps me interested. And I want to continue serving you. So, you know, that's what I enjoy. And I will always listen to what you have to say, and I'd like to think that I will agree with most of it. If it's a good idea, I definitely will. But now I'd like to change the subject a little bit because I care about you as a person. In this building, on October 2nd and 16th, will be a flu clinic, and it will be from 1 to 6 o'clock. Also on October 23rd, from 10 to 4, will be another one. I have 30 seconds. And on December 4th will be one from 1 to 4. Susan Dupa, who is our Waldo County public health nurse, will be here to give those shots. And if you can, I'd really like to have you show up. I'll be at one of them myself. I dislike shots, but I'll still be here. And I will be getting my COVID shot too. So I want to thank everybody for coming tonight, and it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Mr. Dean. Mr. Haig?
Basically, I'm giving people a choice. When the deciding vote was cast for perambulation, I was shocked and felt compelled to run. Basically, I just want to give people a choice. I am dedicated to ending the Nordic Aquafarm fiasco. I think we've been getting lousy legal advice, and I would like to see Lawyer Pottle, who is currently advising the zoning board, who has a clear conflict of interest. He should recuse himself. He should have recused himself at the beginning. He should certainly do it now, seeing as he's a partner with Eaton Peabody, and I certainly meant no offense when I was complimenting anyone in this room, and thank you very much. All I want to do is give people a choice.
Thank you. Mr. August?
One reason, and probably the biggest reason, that spurred me to run is that my greatest fear is that we're losing our resilience in Belfast. We've seen a huge demographic shift in the last 4 years. If you don't know this, our median age has gone from 47 to 60 in 4 years. we're losing what I would call economic diversity. We're pushing working class people out of this town. I think resilience is one of the most important things for any city, because the city will be here long after any of us are here. And if, you know, if we don't start focusing on those issues now, and then we don't start taking, I think, some drastic steps towards those issues, we're going to have, I think, real problems in the future. So I'd like to see us go a lot further on housing. That is my biggest issue. I think we could do a lot more. I think we could come up with a model small lot code is one thing. Talking about under 4,000 square foot lots, we could have pre-approved plans for people. We need to have the ability for people to go in and be able to work with the economic development office and the planning office to come out with a plan that day, permit in hand, to be able to build something affordably. The new developments are great. Those houses are $700,000. That's, you know, there's a place for that. There's a place for subsidized development. People that can do those things don't need assistance. They're able to navigate the system as it exists right now. We need to help people that, you know, want to build and own affordable houses, not just affordable apartments. We need, you know, an entry point for people to build those small houses. They've worked in New England for centuries, and we've zoned them out of existence. And I'm frankly just tired of seeing it, and I think that we can do a lot better. And I know some people don't like this, but, you know, if we have huge investments in public utilities, it's getting expensive to maintain these, we're losing our workforce, we need to do better. So, you know, I'm going to work for that. I hope I can get your vote, and I can start working on these sort of things. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before we sign off for tonight, I want to thank those who made this forum and broadcast possible. First and foremost, thanks to Petra Hall for pulling this entire event together. Thank you to our diligent timekeeper, Nancy Hinckley. And thank you to the crew collecting and collating the questions from the audience, Nick and Rhonda and MJ and Peter. And many thanks also to Pamela Solakangas, the head of the Parks and Recreations Department for the City of Belfast, for the use of the building, Amanda Cunningham from Our Town Belfast for her support, and Ned Leitner of Belfast Community Television, and Charlie Crane and the crew from WBFY. The recording of this forum will be available online on Belfast Community Television and will be rebroadcast on WBFY, Belfast Community Radio, several times before the election on Tuesday, November 5th. Finally, thank you to the candidates who participated in tonight's forum and spent 2 hours answering the citizens' questions. Thanks to everybody who attended tonight and submitted your questions. Keep asking questions, keep staying engaged. I am Michaela Schweitzer-Bloom, Executive Director of the Maine Center for Public Interest Reporting. We publish the Maine Monitor. For more information about the issues in the election and voting in Maine, visit themainemonitor.org. Thank you very much, and have a great night.
You've been listening to the Belfast City Council Candidates Forum 2024. Held September 30th at the Boathouse. We now return you to our regular programming.